With NFR Extra, we're going to take you behind the scenes in a way you've never heard before. Every 2 weeks, you're going to hear personal conversations with the icons and personalities that make up the world's richest and most prestigious rodeo. NFR Extra. All dirt, all rodeo, all year.
Here we are, NFR Extra, episode 25. I am your host, Nevada Caldwell.
And I'm your co-host, Brylan Bentley.
We're here at Cowboy Christmas inside the Bloomer Studio. Boy, did we line up some stuff today.
Alan Jordan and Alexis Bloomer join us on today's episode.
And Alan Jordan is a NFR judge?
PRCA pro official.
Okay, so you and I got to be in line with this one, right? And we got to keep straight and... otherwise he'll keep us straight.
Yeah, he was a straight shooter on this whole interview.
Yes, indeed. And then obviously Alexis Bloomer, right? There's a lot of things we can touch on that. Beautiful thing is that here we are sitting in the Bloomer studio interviewing Alexis. So not only that, listen pretty carefully to both these individuals because they're in the rodeo business. By no means Alan did a long time ago, but do they rodeo? But they have a lot of impact on things. Alexis in a different angle, and there's a lot of stories that she's going to share. And then Alan in this whole concept of officiating and replays and where they're at, where they're going with things. I mean, you live this? I mean, you know.
I live it every day. It doesn't get any better, but it does.
Well, and I think come to find out from this conversation with Alan, you're going to find out that the officiating of rodeo is constantly evolving and looking at how to make themselves better. And well, take a listen.
Check it out.
This is Brylan Bentley covering the rodeo news of the week.
Round two of the Wrangler National Finals winners are bareback riding, Trenton Montero with a 90.5, steer wrestling, Tyler Waggisback 3.6, team roping, Clay Smith and Jade Corkill 4.4 seconds, saddle bronc riding, Jesse Wright with an 89.5 point ride on Awesome Sauce, tie down roping, Marty Yates 7.3 seconds, barrel racing, Donna K. Rule 1369, then Garrett Smith 91.5 points on Black Gold. And now, NFR After Dark with Kendra Santos.
Here with Idaho's Garrett Smith, who just won the second round, stuck it on 91.5 points. Tell us about that bull. Have you had him before?
No, I didn't know much about him. All they say is a little black bull that steps ahead, around to the right, and it's a handful. So that's all I asked. I didn't want to know too much more.
Pete Carr's Black Gold, you've not seen him before?
I haven't, no. But a lot of people have been on him a bunch, and I guess they've only rode him once or twice. So they said he bucked, so...
And he did.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay, so I want to go, go all the way back. If memory serves, you won a record 3 all-around championships in the National High School Rodeo Association, correct?
Yep.
And what all events did you work?
Oh, wow. For the first 2 years of high school, I worked all of them. So, I mean, you're calf roping, bull logging, team roping, barebacks, broncs, bulls, and cutting. So, and then after that, I quit riding bareback horses because I thought that was a dumb idea. And so I'm so glad I quit that.
So you thought bull riding was a good idea?
It hurts a lot less than that event. That one's dumb.
Okay, so now 2014, Brother Wyatt Bulldogs here, and you jump in at about the 6th round and hazed. I don't even remember why. Why, what?
He just felt more comfortable, I guess. Needed a little change. And so I was supposed to just be the little kid hanging out down here and warming horses up. And all of a sudden, he's like, all right, you got a haze. So it's the most nervous I've ever been in my life.
Talk about versatility. I don't know if I've ever heard of a combination of a bull rider hazer at the NFR. But anyway.
Yeah, it's something.
So okay, so this is your third NFR. You were here in 16 and 17. Explain the gap last year.
Last year wasn't very good for me. I had knee surgery after the finals in 17, and then had another surgery after that, and rodeo for 3 months, was making the finals, and then broke my pelvis.
Oh my goodness. But it's. I mean, you still want to do this?
Yeah, I really suck at golf, so I have to do this.
Okay, now what? I understand that Wyatt, he was a gymnast. Now he's a police officer?
Yep, he's a canine officer for St. John's, Arizona. I guess Apache County.
And he's got two little girls.
Yep.
So you're an uncle.
Yep, they're going to be here Monday, I believe.
Okay, the last thing I wanted to ask you about tonight, there were 3 rides tonight. So there's big time ground money.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But it counts now in the bull riding.
Yep.
Okay, how much did you win tonight?
Good job.
I have no clue. I think they said 33, I think.
33,000 tonight, and it counts.
Yep.
Right?
Yep, it all counts.
So, I mean, a little... There's always incentive to make the whistle, but I mean, on a night like this is a big move.
Oh, yeah, this is our eliminator pen, so we're kind of known that there's not going to be very many rides, so it's kind of one of those nights where you get your rope extra sticky so you can't let go.
When will these bulls go again?
Oh, I have no clue.
Okay, okay.
I'm not one to ask that question.
I lied because I do have one more question, and that is, like, watching the bronc riding tonight, too, obviously the eliminator pen, who picks the bulls? And do you guys want the biggies, as they call them?
We all the bull riders pick them. I like the eliminator pen. We didn't get to bring a lot of the eliminators because some of our guys weren't very tough and didn't want to get on them. So, but that's all right. So,
why do you like them?
It makes it more challenging, and you know you're gonna have a big ride, and you know if you ride one of those, you accomplish something.
Pure riding contest.
Yeah, it's a lot of try. So it's pretty much whoever can keep their hand shut and try the hardest is going to win it.
How many victory laps is this for you now?
Only two. The first time I won a round was the 10th round, so that's where they just hand you a buckle and say good job.
Oh, so this is extra fun.
Yeah, this is.
And you actually know how to ride a saddle horse.
Yeah, some days. In the Grand Entry, we feel like we don't, but...
I don't know how great the horses are that you get to get on. But anyway.
It's wild.
All right. Well, congratulations. Continue.
Thank you.
Good luck. You bet.
Looking for tickets to the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo? StubHub is the official secondary and fan-to-fan site of the rodeo. Fans can buy and sell their tickets through a safe and secure online marketplace. Visit nfrexperience.com.
To celebrate the 35th anniversary of the National Finals Rodeo in Las Vegas, LVE and PRCA present the top 35 most memorable moments.
Sage Kimsey set his sights on Donnie Gay's record of 8 bull riding world titles right out of the blocks. And after 5 seasons, he's 5-for-5 and the odds-on favorite to win 6 in a row.
Can this kid ride bulls? Damn. Can he ride bulls or what?
How good is that?
Kimsey won his first world championship in 2014. The same year, he also took the Resistol Rookie of the Year bull riding honors. Kimsey is in a rare rodeo class of cowboys who won world titles in their rookie year. Just 6 cowboys can make that claim. Kimsey sewed up his 5th straight world title in style last December in round 10 with a 93-point thriller aboard Butler & Sons Record Racks Shooting Star.
Come on, Sage.
Yeah. And that's the vintage Sage Kimsey that we come to expect every time he nods his head.
Kimsey also owns some impressive rodeo earnings records, including becoming the first bull rider to ever win more than $400,000 in a single season, a feat that he's accomplished twice, which includes the record for annual bull riding earnings of $436,000-plus set back in 2017. With 2 NFR bull riding average crowns to his credit, one in 2014, the other in 2017, Kimsey enters the 2019 NFR gunning for Jim Shoulder's record of 6 straight world bull riding titles. He rides in with a lead of nearly $100,000.
Wherever you listen to the NFR Extra podcast, whether it be on iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, Google Play, or even YouTube, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. And let us know what you think of this episode or any episode by leaving a comment.
As a contestant, he was a bulldogger and a bull rider, which is an unusual combination. He has long NFR ties. He worked for stock contractor Bob Cook as a young man and served as an NFR flank man behind the bucking chutes back when NFR was in Oklahoma City.
Giving my age away now.
Yeah, right. Welcome to the show, Alan Jordan.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
No problem.
Feeling pretty special. We got a judge sitting here with us.
Well, don't go there.
This has been a long time coming.
Absolutely.
You guys be nice.
So, Alan, you've been a PRCA Pro official for a long time now. Is there any special NFR moments that stick out in your mind over time? 2, 3, 1, whatever. Anything that hits your heart, mind?
Yeah, it's the advancement of the contestants and how much money they're making from Oklahoma City to here. How much is behind it in Las Vegas and everybody that follows it. And I think it's such great opportunities for the contestants nowadays.
Nice. Now, for you seeing over the past 35 years, we can just stay on this real quick.
Sure.
35 years has been a lot of changes.
Yes.
In Vegas. Has Vegas, or not necessarily Vegas, the NFR in Vegas,
Has it been the pinnacle of change for competition across the board
in the season, things like that?
Any examples?
Sure, it has. I can just give you an example. Some great rides back in the day. You know, it'd be 88, 86, and now we're 90s almost every time. The competition levels went up. The stock's been better.
Yep.
They screen their stock better. Our contestants are way more on top of it.
Nice.
You know, because there's a lot of money now. I mean, we used to go down the road and get by, you know, with what we got by with.
Donnie Gay talked about that a lot when we interviewed him.
Yeah. I remember Donnie when I was a kid coming out to California. And, I mean, them guys, they busted the trail there.
Tell me, so we had Oat Berry on yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And Oat talked about the difference of coming into this arena. And apparently, y'all had not been riding in arenas prior to that. Or at least a small, intimate arena. And he said that the timing of everything changed, which increased the competition.
Yes, especially in the timed events, that the scores are so short. And there's just that much less chance for error.
Nice.
You know, if you miss the barrier, you're not going to make money that night.
Yep.
I mean, that's just how it works, you know.
He talked about the training aspect of that. I mean, I guess to my point for you is, did you guys have to change your game and how you had to keep up with everything?
We do. We're changing. We changed this year. You know,
oh, wow.
our we're always evolving, trying to get better, and especially in our judging program. You know, we have films now that we get to go over. We get to scrutinize you. So it's accountability is what I call it. And,
oh, nice.
And I do with bull rides and stuff. And if you stand accountable for yourself, there's nowhere to do but go up.
Yeah. And throughout the year, now the PRCA is actually hosting judging clinics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have our seminars, and I think we have 12 or 14 across the country. We're trying to build a judging program.
Nice.
I think we have 160, give or take. And then there's 8 pro officials that are full-time.
Yep.
And the rest of them are reserves that come in. They'll apply for the rodeos that they think they can go do.
Yeah.
And then they get assigned to them.
Is that similar to how a bullfighter gets their card? Kind of explain what a judge has to go through to get their pro official.
Good point.
Well, when it started back, if you want me back up some, I was entering the bull riding and the bulldogging, and we were so lacking of judges on the West Coast that Jack Hannum was the time. So he would call. I'd have a good bull, and he goes, "Hey, I'm drawing you out of the bull ride, and I'll leave you in the bulldogging." I go, "What? No, you can't do that." You know, "Oh no, we're doing that because of my background of being raised in the business and knowing the other side of it." So you get all aspects of it. And so I'd go to the rodeo and be in the bulldogging, you know.
Yep.
That's kind of how this started.
So this is more of the kind of, we've had this topic with for youth rodeo and how important it is for the contestants today. And, you know, how many of them say, "Oh God, I would love to have that." And they had like little britches and things like that, but nothing to what's going on today.
I can tell you the positive to that. And it is, we deal with the high school and the college, and they're not groomed to this level.
Yep.
So they get re-groomed by us, and they don't like it. You know, they say, "Wait a minute, it's been working so long. Wait a minute, this is..." So now I can see this positive coming, that they're going to be getting this at a young age, so it's less problems when they get up to...
Nice.
Absolutely. We really like to use the national finals for any youth group to show that there are rules, and we do have to follow them with ground rules and things of anything of that
nature. Like it or not. Yeah, they're there. We got to follow them as they do.
So... making sure the best man wins is vitally important to the business. Why is that so important? What I mean, like, what is the essence of that?
Well, I will tell you personally, it's an ego thing for me. You know, because I was rodeoing, not all the time that happened. And that, you know, I mean, it was, you know, most of the time our contestants were crippled or something, and they put them in as judges, and you know, they were maybe just a little bit behind. They didn't get the placings right, and these guys are on the road. So much money's invested, you know, and I mean, in and out of the arena, that I don't see it any other way. That's the number one thing for me, is you gotta get it right.
Well, and this is just, we always try to do a little contrast or compare. Mm-hmm. If you look at what goes on in other pro sports, clearly there, we focus on human error a lot, right? Like, and that's something that just, it's driven home so much, people losing their minds about, you know, the refs or whatever it is. And then obviously you guys are judges. You guys all fall in that same kind of realm.
Oh, sure.
I mean, is there things that you guys look at from the pro side? I mean, do you ever look at NFL and NBA and look at what they're kind of doing? Is there things that you guys pick up on that?
Well, actually, they invited us 8 to I'm trying to think what it's called, where all the officials are for the NFL and all
that. Gotcha, yeah.
Wow.
And so we went there, and we give them our background. They come and watched us at San Antonio and stuff. And Mike Pereira was our man. He's the one that got us in at our seminars. And he came to our seminars. He's the one that got us in this deal.
Yep.
And he sat there and just shook his head. He said, we have officials in one spot on the field, and that's all they do. They're not doing the whole game.
Yep.
And that's, we're doing the whole game with different entities flying at us at all different directions.
Totally.
So he was in amazement, which probably if you do our, we're gonna miss them.
Yeah.
Our bit because of our deal.
Yeah, you're human.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right? Absolutely.
It's kind of what also makes it great.
Yeah.
Right? Is that human error is there.
I mean, because if they really want to, it's a show. I mean, it's competition. If they want to really, really get it right, which we do on other deals.
Yep.
We'd have that replay, but that replay doesn't work all the time.
Mm.
It does for controversial stuff. Yeah. But just like Mike said, they've spent millions and millions in the NFL, and they would never do it again.
Yeah.
And so just like I'll just give you an example. Billy Edbyer rides a horse out there. He's 90. And go, wait a minute. Anybody can push the button. Bingo.
Yep.
We'll go back and scrutinize him. He missed him out. They don't like it ever took away from him.
Yep.
They do not like it took it away. They always want it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So this here's something else. So you think about, we got Alexa sitting in here. Uh-huh. She's with Sage. Uh-huh. She's filming.
Yep.
There's a lot of filming going on.
Sure.
That probably I would imagine, impacts the decisions that happen, right? Do you hear a lot of that afterwards? Like they have evidence or whatever it is now.
Well, I look at it that way. If you can look at it two ways, negative or positive.
Yep.
And I try to look at it. I'm on Sage and I are very good friends. He puts his videos up. I look at him and go, yeah, because all you're doing is learning from it.
Absolutely.
Instead of looking at it saying, God, scrutinize me over it. No, you learned something by it. I mean, it's a fantastic tool if you use it in the right frame of mind.
Yeah. So we're going to stay just on this just for a little bit. Judges are humans and snakes and make mistakes, and they're always going to be made. No doubt about it. No one hates a missed call more than a judge, right? You just touched on that.
Yeah.
Are there some moments, just like we've seen?
I'm good. I know right where you're going.
Perfect. I'll give you an example of the Saints last year, right? Within the NFL,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is there anything that sticks out in your head that someone missed something or someone didn't get that?
No, how about Allen?
Golden buck.
Yeah, about Allen? Yes. I remember I was flagging the short go at bulldogging at San Antonio one year. Jason Miller. He grabs a steer right there as he's going by. Well, when the horse goes by, I'm not in the wrong position. I'm in the wrong position. I haven't rode in the right position. So when he comes around, he looks like he's down. I call him for down. And Jason, he's one of my heroes anyway. And so then we get to look at the replay like 25 times. Right. I'm telling you.
Because great time.
Yeah. And we had 18,000 people just booing. And I'm going, oh, I wish I could dig a hole and get out of here now. But it was a terrible call.
Yep.
Just terrible call. And you can never fix it in the bulldogging. You can never fix a bad call in the bulldogging.
Yeah, it ain't coming back.
No,
you got one jump.
Everything else you can fix.
Man.
Like on the plus fives and the barriers and all that stuff, you can fix that.
Gotcha.
But a bulldogging, you can never make it right. You bring them back and they got the advantage on the other bulldogger. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. You've been coming here for a while.
A long time.
Let's go back to, because this is kind of fun when we get the veterans on here and they've been, coming for 35 years. Where did you stay? Your first NFR here in Vegas, where did you stay?
Samstown.
Apparently that's going to be our answer for everyone.
Samstown, I'm telling you. And that was the place.
Wow. Willie and Jose's? Did
you ever go to, is that upstairs?
Yeah, it's the Mexican restaurant.
This was upstairs where we used to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I think
it was. Yes.
Yeah.
Man, wow. So, and then for the 80s, was it Samstown? I mean, where are you staying at now?
I'm staying at the Hard Rock.
Nice. How do you like that?
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's okay.
So over the years, there's other things that have happened here. We've taken upon ourselves to grow the rodeo via special events and things like that. How do you like it's been being kind of like a big hodgepodge network for everybody? Has that worked out well for you guys?
We pretty much stay hidden. I'm going to be, you don't get out and mingle too much, you know, and we got our own little routines and. So it really doesn't affect us. Like I got good friends over here doing the junior stuff, and we talk on the phone and stuff. But mm-hmm. It gives a lot of opportunities for everybody else.
Nice.
In just the whole ball of it. I didn't think I'd like it at first, but there's sure a lot of people that sure cover every part of it. And that's nothing but positive for our industry.
Gives a job to everybody that's working. Yeah, you don't have to be number one at the Thomas and Mack. You can work your way up.
You don't have to be a chosen little group. You know, I mean, it's opening up for a lot of people.
So what made you get into the official side? Like what? Like,
well, I kind of tapped on it a little bit there, but my mom and dad rodeoed. And when I was real little, and so Bob Cook's rodeo company started. I was real little. I'd work for him for the summers in L.A.
Yeah.
And pushing cattle and stuff. And then I ended up moving up there and living with him. Went to high school up there and everything else and flanked for him. And that kind of got me started. I was pretty much hooked since I was a little kid.
But it's like the judge started, but I mean, we were just passionate about, I don't know necessarily being right, but more or less keeping things right. Is that, I mean,
after you compete and you complain.
Yep.
And I had no problem complaining because I was the director out there in California for 15, 18 years. I dealt with all the complaints, you know, from the contractors to the contestants. So if it wasn't right, well, it's always Alan complaining. So then they said, okay, you're the big complainer. You get in there and judge. You know, I said, okay. Well, here
there is. That's fine.
Yeah, here I am.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we know you. Look, hey, we got short time. We know you're a busy guy.
Yep.
Thank you for coming on the show. I mean, this is some good stuff. I mean,
you guys make it easy.
Yeah. No.
And Alexis is here, so I can go back and tell Sage. You know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, how are you liking the competition coming into this? I mean, you feeling good about everything?
I don't really even keep track of that.
Yep.
Because it's just better for me to be open and fresh on every night.
Nice.
I mean, like here, I'm in the bareback riding, and I'm on the back being mean to the bull riders if I have to be.
Yep.
And Butch Kirby as well. But we have such a good relationship with all of them that they all understand what we have to get done.
Yeah.
You know. So I don't even look at that where they're at or what's going on, or what they have drawn. It's just better that way.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So, and this is probably the last question. How do you feel about rodeo today? I mean, you've seen it come. You've seen it grow. How are you feeling about where rodeo is right now? Seriously.
Oh, well, yeah. I tell you, I come from the West Coast.
Yep.
And we have a lot of heat on humane issues.
Yes.
And I'm very forward on the humane issues. I'm very strong to cover them because there's a lot of people that don't see it.
Yep.
And so I'm kind of on that line. You know, if anything red flag flies up, I'm the one.
Gotcha.
I go tell them, hey, you know, because I'm telling you, it might work in Oklahoma or whatever.
Yep.
But I'm just telling you, there's a group out there, or numerous groups, that just assume it doesn't matter if we do things right or wrong. They're there to try to, you know.
We see that on social a lot.
Sure you do.
You know what I mean? We'll get private messages. Yep. And I do my due diligence, pass it to people.
Yes.
That's way above my pay grade. I don't even know that. But, yeah, it's tough.
I will tell you, we are the strongest for the animals. I don't care anything you do. I mean, I'm telling you, we're for the animals. I mean, I've been here since last Friday, checking them in. They're healthy. They look good. If they have a blemish, we deal with it.
Yep.
Bring the vets in. You know, I mean, we're on top of it.
Go ahead, Opie. I know you're going to say something. No?
We're good. It's true, though. I mean, I've been behind there.
Yeah.
There's actually a full crew.
Yes.
That is just our animal crew that goes out daily, just walking through, making sure nothing has a cough, nothing has anything you could think of.
I know this is a very kind of sensitive area for all of us, but the thing that always kind of miss me is that it just seems like there's not enough, and it's not to anyone to blame, but just not enough education to create confidence with people.
I was going to tell you, I had a good conversation with Jerome Schneeberger today.
Yep.
And I told him, all we got to do is teach.
Yep.
And not an overnight deal, but explain. I mean, I remember when I was a kid and the humane issues rose at Salinas, California.
Yeah.
And so instead of pushing them back, they invited them in. They were behind the chutes with us and everything else. When we got done, they were going, oh, this is not even what we thought.
You weren't even worried about the human being.
No, no.
Exactly.
I mean, it was a great teaching. I was a kid.
Yep.
You know, and right there, I said, oh, right there's the deal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some people don't want to learn. That's fine.
True.
You know, I mean, I understand that. But if they have really concerns, they want to be able to get in there and look and say, hey, that ain't all what it's cracked up to be, what they're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Education is everything. You hit on a good point. That's funny because, Jerome and I just talked about it this morning.
Well, it's just a kind of a theory we have. It's just education creates confidence.
Sure.
Right? And
sure.
If we create confidence in what we're doing here, we get more fans. Sure. They start caring more. I mean, you meet Sage Kimsey, right?
Yeah.
why are you not going to care about that guy?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
And he's doing what he's doing, and then you're educating him.
I think he's mean to Trey, but it's okay.
Nice.
No. I tell him that all the time.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? Alan, this is great. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Great information.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, part of our process, like I shared with you, is us learning. And you coming on, sharing stuff. You know, we've had guys like Brocker come on here.
Yeah.
My goodness, that was like Rodeo 101 with him.
Randy Brocker?
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Talking about the ARC Foundation.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy how much you learn about our groups that are existing.
Yes.
And part of this podcast's reason of existence is just to share the stories of
He does a great job at Pendleton. I work with him every year there. And I mean, I'm telling you, that whole crew up there is on the ball.
Yeah. Yes. He's legit.
Yes, he is. I mean, he comes from the bottom up as well. Yeah. You know. Yeah.
Well, you seem like a pretty solid guy, man. I mean, we're just meeting you for the first time, and this is good stuff. So, I mean, I thank you, and I know our fans are going to love hearing this.
I hope so.
The next generation of rodeo stars will compete in Las Vegas at the Junior World Finals presented by Yeti. December 5th through 14th at Cowboy Christmas inside the Las Vegas Convention Center, more than 850 youth contestants will compete for titles in 9 events. Bull riding, team roping, tie down roping, steer wrestling, barrel racing, breakaway, pole bending, mini saddle bronc riding, and mini bareback riding. Competitions start at 9 a.m. daily inside the Wrangler Rodeo Arena. Visit nfrexperience.com for details.
All right, Double B, bringing a nice special guest here.
I'm pretty excited for this. We don't get a lot of females in this room.
This is true.
I'm good with this.
We got plenty in this room right now.
Yes.
So, and we're sitting in, you know, the Bloomer studio for NFR Extra. So this all makes sense, right?
And you're outnumbered, so.
This is true. Award-winning journalist, producer, author, and entrepreneur, host of Spotlight Girl Talk podcast. Welcome to the show, Alexis Bloomer.
Thanks. That was so dark and mysterious. You had like that night, like jazzy vibe going. I like it.
I had to bring it down and bring it up.
I like it a lot.
What's it like being a bloomer? What is it like being a bloomer?
Oh, goodness. So it's funny because when I was a little girl, I wanted to get away from the bloomer stigma. So I didn't want to make it on my own. I want to make it on my own so bad. And I don't want people to think just because I'm the bloomer girl, I accomplished my goals.
Yep.
And so I went to college away and I did all this stuff. And then I was in New York living, actually, and I realized, you know what? Like, my dad actually came from picking sunflowers in a field. He worked odd jobs everywhere, and he sold everything we had. We lived in a trailer house, and he sold it all to create Bloomer Trailers. And
really?
Yeah, and that was almost 21 years ago. And so I look at what my dad's accomplished, and I look at how he was crazy and called my mom at 30 years old and was like, hey, Cam, we're going to – sorry about that. My voice is going on. It's Vegas.
All good.
He called my mom. He's like, we're going to start our own company. And my mom's response was, oh, shit. That the rest is history. My dad has worked extremely hard. He's extremely passionate about this industry. And as someone that's equally as passionate about this industry and that loves someone involved in this industry, I'm happy to see my parents put themselves out there and help not only youth people, but be involved in the rodeo itself and help grow it. And so for me now, it's almost an honor to be a bloomer. So for a long time, I was worried about it, but now I'm proud to be trailer trash.
Well, hey, and look, I've watched your parents. I mean, you know, 5 years being around LVE, seeing just the kind of just very small perspective I see. Your dad's a hardworking dude.
They are both. You don't want to ever be the person that's not working around my parents because they will run circles around you. Yeah. And so I think that's where my brother and I got our work ethic is because when we were little, you never had days off. So my dad was going to shows or doing this. And so my brother and I would be the ones helping set up shows. My mom and I would be decorating. Even this year at the BFI, we're the ones out there serving drinks and stuff to people. So we're never too big to do any of that stuff because that's what helped our family get to where we are now. And we're so passionate about it. And we're passionate about the products too. I mean, we want to build the safest, most durable, and the beautifulest trailer going down the road. And so for us, it's a family affair and we're all really proud of it.
You know what I think is intimidating about you guys is your guys' confidence. You know, you work hard and like that, and a good intimidate. Like that's I think why you get this kind of this camera on you a lot of times is because your confidence. You know,
it's funny because for a long time, like I said, I struggled with that. I was like, okay, and people still ask me questions about trailers, and I'm clueless. I'm like, you know what? Go talk to my brother, my dad, or my mom. So for me, I'm like, they're awesome. They're going to keep you safe. My dad will take your phone call on Christmas Day. Like I know that for a fact. And so that's something I really am proud of. But it's easy to be confident when you have such a great support system. I feel like my parents instilled us from a young age that together we can go through anything. And we've went through rough times. And I feel like for us as a family, we grew through them and we just feel stronger than ever.
So talking about confidence, you have a book that is Good Girl, Bad World.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of touch on that a little bit? Because that book pretty much talks all the way through about a teenage girl
living their life in confidence.
Yeah. So it's funny. I wrote that book. I would write chapters like diary entries. It sounds ridiculous, but I made a millennial video that went viral, and I did not anticipate that by any means. And I realized how cruel girls could be at that time, and I realized how hateful, and I was like, we are lacking ladies in the society, women that are truly, you know, still eloquent and still can speak and still stand up straight and will be able to go into conversation. Instead, they go on social media and use profanity and cut you down. And so I really wanted to write a book to my younger self. And so each chapter is titled Dear Young Girl, Dear Beautiful Girl, and it talks about all the things that we struggle with as women. And I feel like I wrote the book because I wanted them to know that I went through them all together. So it was truly letters to myself. And I want any girl, everybody knows me, I write back every single girl on Facebook. I help girls through breakups. I help. Sage is like, Alex, really? And I'm like, you know what? Like, no one was there for me during a lot of that. My mom was there for me and Sage was there for me, but that was the darkest point of my life. And so if my book helps one girl, or if she feels like she can turn to me and it helps her get out of a bad situation, I have a lot of girls write me from abused relationships. And so I've helped a lot of those girls doing that, whether it's sending them shelters they can call, trying to find help and outlets for them. And so for me, I wanted to use my platform for good. And I feel like that really set me up for that. So it was a blessing in disguise at the time. I was scared to death, I'm not going to lie, but it ended up working out for the best.
It's a great book.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So kindness is key. Mm-hmm. What's that all about?
When I was a little girl, I was bullied really bad for my weight and the way I looked. And so, I didn't know it at the time. I was very confident as a little girl.
Good.
I was very, I guess because I came from such a loving home, like it's only us four. And so growing up, I didn't know anything was wrong with me. And not that there is anything wrong with being overweight or looking different, but, as I grew up, people were just mean. And then it got into high school and like, I lost a lot of weight and I was a cheerleader, but see, people were still mean. So I'm like, okay, I can go from being overweight and then I could be going from the head cheerleader, like homecoming queen, and people are still cruel. So it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter where you come from. I feel like people are just cruel in this world and it's hard being a kid. Mm-hmm. And so for me, Dr. Seuss was one of my favorite books growing up and I still can recite a lot of his books, so The Places You'll Go and things like that. People gave that to me for graduation gifts. And so my freshman year of college, I loved the way that Dr. Seuss rhymed. I thought that was the greatest way to resonate with people because you catch on and you remember those phrases. So I was a freshman in college. I sat on my bed and I wrote Kindness is Key. And it's a rhyming children's book that tackles bullying, the differences of what people look like, whether it's their ethnicity, their race, or not their, anything like that. It just tackles all those issues that parents are kind of scared to talk about because bullying is such an epidemic, but this book kind of gives them the platform. And hey, listen, if you can sit down and read this, it'll open up conversations with your children instead of just ignoring it. Cause right now schools aren't doing much about it. You have children.
Oh yeah.
It's cruel. Like
it's tough.
And I mean, you're young, so you probably dealt with it too. So there's no one out there talking about bullying right now. Yeah. We see a kid committing suicide, but I don't want to see a 14-year-old committing suicide. I don't want them thinking that's their only option because it does get better, but no one's there to tell them that.
Yeah,
it's definitely a weird time for teenagers, and that's cool that you're focused on. And, you know, yes, I definitely have a daughter, and, you know, I'll just go on the book side of things, just to how important that is. I'm assuming Randy read you. I'm assuming your parents read you when you were a little girl, right?
You know, it's funny, actually. Like, I can't think of a time my parents read to me. Really? Well, I've always been an avid reader. Like, I am.
When you were, like, two.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that's where
I remember, like, I'm old now.
Yeah, but, I mean, to your book, I said, I guess the point is that that kind of information, when it comes from the parent reading to the kid, it resonates so well.
It does.
You know, and that it just it hits the heart, and it's a lot of
it's bonding time.
There's a lot of studies with you know, parents reading to their kids, and you know, you putting materials out there to promote that is huge to the overall industry. So I mean, hats off.
Well, you have like I met your son. He is so sweet, and he was such a hard worker when he was at the Vegas shoot, and I was so impressed that a kid his age was there doing all that work, was behind the scenes doing the grunt work, didn't want any attention, but was willing to step up and help. And I mean, we have so many kids like that in the world, but we're bashing them and bringing them down instead of raising them up and saying, listen, you're a leader.
Yep.
And you could do great things. So I just hope that my books kind of do that for children.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. So you are this is something that I've paid attention about you. This is the inside of the other things, all the good things here. But I think this is something that's just kind of like the way you're hardwired. You're very passionate about journalism. When did this start? When did you start looking at it and saying, no, that's where I want to like kind of start putting my stamp on things?
I want to write a book.
Yeah.
You have two now.
Yeah.
Three.
Three.
Yeah. It's crazy to think about, you know, people always made fun of me for talking too much. So I was the girl, I'd ask 100 questions and I was obnoxious about it to the point, like it was probably annoying. So, growing up, I think I was 12 or 13, my parents got me a karaoke machine for Christmas, and nice. I had it set up in their bedroom downstairs, and I would go in there and I would pretend like I was interviewing. And for me, the girls on the news stations were the prettiest girls in the world. So I was like, I want to be that one day. So as I evolved and got older, I didn't want to be that because I wasn't really into the negativity side of it as much. Right. I don't like reporting on crime and things like that. But I always knew from a young age that like that's what my calling was. I love telling people stories. And it's not about me. I love showing people in a positive light. Like, I feel like there's so many people with such great stories. Everyone has one. It doesn't matter if you're a hobo on the side of the street or if you're Bill Gates. Like, everyone has something that someone doesn't know about them. And so I really wanted to start from a young age. I got the internship with Dan Rather at college. I was a junior, and I went against hundreds of kids, and it was a big stepping stone. That was the reason I went to Sam Houston. And they were like, you're a junior. You probably won't get it. Seniors get it. And so I went in there and I lived up in New York and studied under him. And that was the greatest thing that ever happened to me because Dan Rather was a pillar in journalism. And so I was going back and I was editing old things of his, old footage, whether he's on the border, helping people like that are coming over and trying to do different things. He's in Afghanistan in the ground interviewing the Taliban. Yep. He's doing all these things. And I was like, you know, that man is providing a different outlet. He's done so much. And he also taught me from his mistakes too. He talked about them openly. And so for me, I knew that I wanted to protect journalism integrity. And right now in society, we're not seeing that very often. It's everybody's opinion. And so for me, I'm like, our job is still to tell the truth. We're telling the facts. Like, it's not like we're supposed to step in. And I mean, y'all have a podcast, so you kind of know what this is like in the media world.
Absolutely.
You just kind of got to, I feel like we need more people that are willing to tell the news and less people that are willing to tell their opinions. So
that's
why I'm very vocal about that.
So let's switch gears here, and we're going to bring Sage into the conversation, right? So two questions here, but this is a number one, you know, watching you guys through the social side of things, you're clearly creating a nice little young power couple of like what's coming. Well, I'm
thank
just,
you. If I you, appreciate that.
If you look across the board for all the young rodeo athletes, right. And the PRCA, you guys stick out pretty good. And it's not because, you know, just because you're a couple, it's because of what you guys are doing together, you know, kind of the voice you have in this rodeo business. What's it like being with Sage and being because I've watched him grow up this process.
Yeah,
and
you've known him a long time.
Yeah. So how has it been from starting into where you're? I know you don't need to go back to when you guys were super young and met and all those things. You guys are still young, but how's it been like this process? You know,
it's funny. People ask me about Sage a lot because he's a very elusive person. Like you see a little bit of him, but he's not one to just speak freely about things. Like he is. Like me, I love everyone. He says I am like the social butterfly, and he's the one that's just like trying to ring me in all the time. Like, come on, butterfly this way. So, but no, you know, Sage is funny because we never fight. Like, he is my best friend in the entire world. And so people, I think they'd be surprised to know that, like, when we're at home, like, we're that cheesy couple. We dance every night. Like, and it's not even just like country slow dance. Like, we'll be down to hip hop in the kitchen. Like, that's just who we are. And I feel like we've learned to keep fun at the center of it. And I was telling him the other day, I read this thing that was really interesting about relationships, and you're married. I don't know if you have a boyfriend or if you're married, but it said like the thing that people, the reason that marriages and relationships fail is that because we have unmet expectations. And so when we came into this, Sage and I had no expectations. We just liked each other for who we were. We never tried to change each other. And I think that's why it's been so successful. It's been 4.5 years we've been dating now. So to see us like where we started, I was scared to death to come to the NFR with him that year. And we'd only been dating 2 months. And everybody's like, if he fails, this is all on you. And I'm oh, man. So people gave me so much crap. Donnie Gay was like, Alexis, come on. And I'm like, I know. And then he met me. He's like, okay, you're fine. But I think Sage, both of us attribute our success to each other a lot because Sage inspires me with him and his goal, how goal-driven he is.
Oh, yeah.
And he is the most focused, passionate person I've ever met my entire life. Like, he will not waver from his goal. Mm. People try to make him. And so for me, that gave me a lot of confidence, too, that, hey, I can write books. So before Sage, I had accomplished a lot. But I tell everybody all the time, after Sage is when I became the award-winning journalist, producer, author, host, everything. And so I really do owe a lot of my confidence to him, too, because he is so confident in himself. So being with a partner like that, it really kind of keeps you grounded, but at the same time, it shows you that you can accomplish anything, especially when he's brave enough to go do it.
Yeah. You touch on relationships, and yes, I'm married, and something that kind of, I think, if I'm not being, you know, some sort of marriage counselor guy here, but
like, I like it though. I like where it's going.
But if you think when you use the word partner, it's probably properly said because that's what I have with my wife. Right. Yeah. And if anything, by no means am I there to provide for her or her to provide for us. Yeah. We provide together.
Definitely.
And it's all about that partnership and partnership and teamwork that, you know, when you guys are actually in it together, it makes a bigger difference, right? Mm-hmm. Like if there's one side of, like if Sage was the one providing everything, it's going to be outweighed. There's not going to be a nice scale to properly going forward. And I think that's crucial to success. It's to a happy marriage, to happy life. Mm-hmm. You know, so with that being said, there's one question. This is from Michael Mack.
I knew this would happen.
But this is a kind of a more of a soft Michael Mack coming at you guys because he knows you too. What is your and Sage's dream vacation?
Oh, okay. You know, we just bought a new house, and this sounds so cheesy, but we're gone so much. So I'm gone interviewing a lot, and then he's gone. So we never really get to mesh up. We try to meet at least once a month when he's on the road. So now being home has been like the best vacation. I know it sounds terrible. We love our new house. It's actually on one of the oldest Indian campgrounds in the state of Texas. And so we have bluffs, and we go out in the Ranger at night, and we drive around. We have our pups, and it's actually dream living. Like, I feel like it's almost unfair how happy we are right now in that place. But we really want to go to Europe bad. Oh, wow. Sage wants to go over there and play in Scotland and stuff. He's a big golfer. Oh. And so he wants to go over there, and I would love to go backpacking through Greece because I think that would be so fun. But every year, once a year after the Vegas and Christmas, my birthday's Christmas Eve, so we try to take a vacation, and we're very big history nerds. Like, we are nerds, guys. So last year we went to DC, we went to New York before, we went to Dominican Republic, and we like to go and learn about these cultures and also learn about the places that we're going. So like DC, we spent a whole day at George Washington's house. Like, we're big nerds. No one knows that about Sage, but he's extremely intelligent, like high IQ. He's very smart. And so when we go places, he tells me all these things, and I'm a history minor, and so I tell him all these things too. So I think this year we're going to Hawaii though, so we're pretty excited about that. We need a beach vacation away from rodeo, away from dirt.
So the next time I'm on stage, I'm going to test them some history, because Michael Mack is the same way. You know, you bring up something, you know, hey Michael, what happened in 1867 you know, in the Midwest? And it's like, oh, well, there's a few things, you know. And
does he have random facts? Because Sage is like 100% the weirdest nerd facts. Did you know that killer whales actually weigh an average? I'm like, what? I don't care.
Do you know lizards have like the most taste buds on their tongues?
Yeah. Oh, and then he tells me that Starbucks hits every one of your senses. Like, goes in and tells him, like, Sage, and every night we go to bed to like Nat Geo. So like, we watch any type of documentary there is on any type of National Geo. I'm like, okay, Sage, too awesome. Much for me. But yeah.
Man. Okay.
All right. But before we go.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I got to ask, let's hit NFR fashion.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
You have no shame and you go out there. Well, and I know in past people actually kind of came at you about it. And
oh yeah.
Yeah. Seriously. I watch you on social media and it's kind of crazy. Hit on a little bit of how you feel about the fashion here.
You know, people always ask me that. And I feel like Vegas is the one place you can be whatever you want to be. And it's fun.
Absolutely.
Like, a lot of girls that maybe aren't confident wearing glitter and stuff can wear glitter here, and people aren't going to judge them. For me, I never judge, because I'm like, you know what? You're here. You're supporting rodeo. I don't care if you come in a freaking feed sack. You're good. Like, as long as you're there and you're supporting the rodeo, I don't care. I have some really wild outfits this year, and Sage was like, Alex. And I'm like, you know those memes on Facebook? That's going to be me on Pink Night. And I'm okay with it. He's like, I watch out. He's like, okay, Dolly. I'm like, I take that as the biggest compliment.
You're like,
it's funny because I feel like NFR fashion, like, it's become such a thing. I don't know about y'all, within the five years with Fashion Posse and Bleacher Babe and all these girls coming out doing it, like you said, it gives everybody a place to fit in and belong, because before that we never really talked about, but now we kind of create a revolution. If you look at the runways, Calvin Klein, all these people are using Western influence on their runways.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, we are kind of our trendsetters in a way, and I like to see that. And I like to see anybody that's free to be creative. And I feel like this is the place to do it. And Vegas has been not only great to rodeo, but also great to fans.
Well, and people listening to the show, you just said feed sack. I wouldn't be surprised if someone, I got an idea with that. Yeah, you never know.
Yeah. I'm with you.
That's how this world works, right?
Hey, I'm with you. I have some wild outfits. Everyone, my outfits is black this year. And Sage is like, you going to a funeral? And I'm like, no, baby, we're back in black after last year. Yeah. Like, no. So I totally get it. But it is cool to see it. I mean, I know you're so into the fashion Nevada. Like,
I love it.
I see your outfits every night. Stunning.
I stay up all night planning this out. And it's, you know,
he follows his schedule and everything.
Yeah,
right.
I love it. Yeah, what are you wearing pink night?
You know what's funny? I actually have a very pink. I love Pink Night. My aunt was a double breast cancer survivor. She's still alive.
That's amazing.
Yeah, for the past 20 years. We'll just talk about breast cancer real quick. You know, it's something that, I think for me being a part of the rodeo, and we talk about fashion, one of the things that I think has become very powerful is Pink Night.
Tough enough, it's my favorite night.
But I mean, so, and more to this, when you think about when the other sports do it, you know, they got their pink bows or there's something in there, and it's got some sort of something to it, right?
Yeah.
The rodeo, it has a lot more impact.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
You look all the way around and you start to understand, and this is the reason why.
Yeah.
There's athletes that are females in the rodeo.
Mm-hmm.
So when you watch NFL, there may be somebody impacted like myself with my aunt, but
yeah.
No, there may be a contestant in this process. So there's a lot more levity to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, it just shows the power of when we do those things, how important that is. Yeah, no, it's, I love Pink Night actually.
I do too. I lost my grandmother to breast cancer, and that's actually why I rushed my sororities, because there was, our philanthropy was the Susan G. Komen, and we were really active in it. And I went to football games, passed out ribbons, but I told them, you know what? Nothing compares to rodeo, like the, what we do in Step Up. Cause you can go to a small rodeo in the middle of nowhere. Pendleton Roundup has a whole day and brings survivors on the field.
Yep.
Wow. So for me, I'm like, this isn't just a 1 month thing. This isn't just a something we're doing all year and we're passionate about it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Join us for Pink Night on Monday.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right here
and,
at the
and Throwback next Thursday.
Oh, Throwback. I know I'm so excited. And we're
retro.
So pumped.
Yes.
Well,
thank you guys so much.
Yeah.
Thank
well, this
you
was,
for coming on.
Yeah. This was, this was fantastic.
I'm glad I could fill in for you, Dale.
Yeah. No, this Dale. Is, hey, you know what? At the end of the day, this is what people want to hear. You know, there's other people that are listening. We're not always talking about rodeos, we talked about, and yeah, this is probably one area we haven't addressed. So thank you, Alexis.
Of course. Thank you, thank guys. You guys do a great job. I like the gold mics.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's a wrap on that one. Again, learning and from Alan and Alexis. I mean, two different individuals in this business, but there's always a crossover, right? Whether it's Sage Kimsey in her world or, you know, Sage for him, there's a connection there.
Or the concourse or
that's
in
right.
the arena.
Yes. just amazing though. And it was amazing that, the things that Alexis shared opposed to something like Alan, completely different on this episode, right? I mean, they don't match up, but it's rodeo.
Thanks for joining us on NFR Extra. Visit NFRExperience.com for more information. Also, don't forget to follow us, Google Play, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Click subscribe.
Gotta make it out to Vegas, where the big boys roam, with the Rovers and the Racers and the Bulls and the Browns, and the ladies in the skin-tight Wranglers and the cowboy hats. And it don't get me-